What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, June 19th, 2019. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the rogue one, Gary Whitta.
Hello.
Hello.
Back. I didn't see you last week because you were at E3.
I was.
I was out of town also. I was kind of doing the watching the live streams.
Sure.
Remotely.
Here and there.
I caught quite a bit of your stuff.
How did we do?
Caught some of your EA Play stuff.
How'd I do?
You were great, of course. Of course. You always get your money's worth when you're high grade.
Yeah, that's what you're right.
I saw you on the GameSpot couch.
Sure, yeah.
You were everywhere.
That's what I do, man.
You were everywhere. You know what I
mean? Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah.
Andrea is the busiest lady in the business. I can be the busiest
man. You're the
man
hardest
in the
working man in show business.
Exactly,
you're the new
exactly.
James Brown.
Exactly. What were you doing? Where were you?
I was working on a movie gig on a movie
nice.
Project out in New York.
Book at Eli, too.
Well, I was very happy to be in New York. I love New York.
Yeah.
The hotel they put me in was right next to a Cheesecake Factory.
Oh, you were in
so
hog heaven.
I very rarely get to go to the Cheesecake Factory here in the city. It's at the top of the Macy's department store.
Yeah.
And it's always packed out. You can never get in.
Yeah.
This one.
Hottest reservation in town, they say.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
hottest ticket in town.
So.
But this one, where I was in White Plains, New York.
Yeah.
Which is upstate, kind of in the middle of nowhere.
Gotcha.
And my hotel was right next to it. So I was done by like 5 o'clock each day. My work day was done.
Check
so
out.
when I moseyed over there, like 5 o'clock, it's totally open.
Yeah.
I got the new Cake Pay app.
What's
for
that?
It's like Apple Pay, but for the Cheesecake
oh,
Factory.
Wow,
they
there
have
you
their
go.
Own thing.
Oh my God.
And I think the Cheesecake Factory gets a bad rep.
Does it now?
I enjoy the Cheesecake Factory.
I've only been a handful of times. And I would say I started going a handful of times in the last few years. And
it's that overwhelming menu, I think, puts a lot of people
yeah,
off.
But they got
like
those Buffalo Blasts.
Buffalo Blast,
yeah,
that's
like,
your go-to?
Oh, my God, yeah, as an appetizer. It's like a fried wonton with buffalo chicken in it.
Oh, I might have to try that next time.
Oh, my God.
I got the dynamite shrimp.
Yeah?
And it was very good.
Yeah. Tell me more about the Cheesecake app, though. So is this like a Starbucks thing where I'm preloading
so it's called,
it with money?
It's called Cake Pay,
okay, Cake
of all
Pay.
Things. Because
sure.
Here's what happened.
Well, please lay it on.
I went out to the Cheesecake Factory, and I left my wallet at home.
Oh.
But I have Apple Pay. And more places are taking that now.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, maybe I can just pay with my phone. I don't need to go back to the hotel and get my wallet. Mm-hmm. And so I looked it up, like Cheesecake Factory Apple Pay, and it led me to this cake pay app. And it's really weird. It seems like an additional unnecessary step.
Uh-huh.
You link your Apple Pay to Cake Pay.
Yeah, this does seem
and then you use Cake Pay to pay for your cake.
Sure, okay.
Which seems like, do
are
I really
you earning points in the cake
I guess
pay?
Maybe you're earning
okay,
loyalty points
okay.
or something.
Sure.
But, you know, I didn't have to go back and get my wallet. And the wait staff, they weren't that familiar with the app, but they figured it out.
Good.
Super nice. One of the things I like about the Cheesecake Factory is it would make you feel very welcome.
Yeah.
They're always really nice and friendly.
When you hear your family.
Yeah. Super, super. That's a different place, isn't
is it? Is
it?
I don't know.
Isn't that the Olive Garden?
It is the Olive Garden.
That's the Olive Garden.
Yeah, that's the Olive Garden, yeah.
Which I like also.
Yeah.
You ever
go
to the Olive Garden here in San Francisco?
You know who loves the Olive Garden here in San Francisco? Andrea Renee.
Oh, she
so
does?
So there's been a few times we've wrapped a game
to it. I love Andrea, but I thought she might have seen herself like a little bit above the cheesy chain restaurant.
Andrea Renee. I think she's as happy at an Olive Garden as she is at the finest dining.
She's a woman for all seasons.
Gang puck, whatever. You know what I mean? Like she's, you know, from the middle of the country. Fargo, North Dakota. She's bootstrapped. She understands what's up.
Oh, that's what I mean. She comes from dirt, basically.
Sure,
like,
exactly.
Like the rest of us.
Yeah. Sometimes I remind her she is dirt still. If you didn't know, ladies and gentlemen, this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Today, we'll be talking about Breath of the Wild sequel, Bernie Sanders talking video games, and a whole bunch of Gary Whitta related questions.
Oh, really?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
This is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show, patreon.com/kindafunnygames. You can leave your questions, comments, concerns, everything under the video game sun. Then I put it in the show, which you can watch as we record it live on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. If you're watching live, you have a special job. Go to kindafunny.com/you'rewrong. Tell us what we screw up as we screw it up so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames. RoosterTeeth.com and listening on podcast services around the globe. Housekeeping for you. Remember, we have launched We Have Cool Friends. It's a new interview show. You can go over to YouTube.com/KindaFunny or podcast services and subscribe and watch. So far, Devin Sawa, Anthony Rapp, both on it.
I saw a bit of that yesterday, I think.
Yeah.
Was it yesterday you put a new one up?
Monday.
The day before?
Monday. They pop
well,
on Mondays.
I can't watch it. You were on Twitch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you popped in. You said, "Who's this guy?"
Yeah, that's right. I popped onto Twitch and see who's live, and I saw you were live. I'm like, "What's this?"
Yeah,
checked it out. New show? Talked to someone. And I was like, who's this guy? And they told me. They told me this guy was.
Yeah, check it out. YouTube.com/kindoffunny Please subscribe over there. Watch it. Podcast service is slowly rolling out to everything.
Who you got lined up for that? Are you able to reveal who you might have lined up for future cool friends?
So Josh McCuga coming up.
Okay, who's that?
He's going to be part of it. You know Josh. You've run into Josh. He's the guy who comes here and he wears loud suits and he's basically a better Nick. He does the newlywed game with us. He did Josh Brady. They're gonna do a deep dive interview with him and stuff. Megaran on the hook to come in. Cameron Cuff coming up eventually. All right, cool. We got some good people.
Before we move on, just one quick shout out. You know who I thought was everyone at Kind of Funny did great stuff at E3.
Thank you.
You know who I think's the rising star, who for me was the breakout star of E3? And I think actually is gonna go on to do great things. So I think he's a natural. Snowbike Mike.
Oh yeah.
Terrific.
100%.
Absolute natural in front of the camera. Yeah. Really, really good. I think he's got a big career ahead of him.
I do too, something
in front of a camera. Whatever it is.
100%.
His energy is so infectious. I love it.
100%. But yeah. I think Snowbike Mike
really enjoyed watching him.
He's incredibly talented. I don't think he believes in himself enough. He keeps always, when I give him these opportunities, he's always like, he's doing the Snowbike Mike way. Like, Greg, thank you. Blah, blah. But it's like he doesn't, you know. He's,
no, I was. He posted one of his E3 videos and I tweeted him out. I said, dude, you're a natural. And, you know, I feel like when people don't. Are a little bit like, really, am I good? They need to hear that.
Yeah, 100%.
They don't always validate themselves internally, so they got it. So you got to like give it to them from the outside. Yeah. But yeah. I think Snowmike Mike's gonna be a big deal. I heard it here first.
Yeah, breaking news from Gary Wood. He's got the seal of approval. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Daniel Massey, Blackjack, Colton Yoder, and Mohammed. Today we're brought to you by Grubhub, Brooklyn, and Quip. But I'll tell you about that later. For now. Let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news! Three items on the Roper Report.
Oh, Baker's Dozen!
The E3 hangover continues as the news.
So all the main E3 news happened last week. Now we're getting like the dregs. Now we've got the dregs.
Everybody's laying on their beds all sweaty, just huffing and puffing. You know what I mean? They gave it everything they could. Yeah, now here we are. Number one comes from Jason over at Kotaku, where he's talking about the Breath of the Wild sequel origin stories. He was talking to Anum over there, basically how this came to be. It's a great read. Tried it through translator. A whole bunch of great questions over there. But the one that pertains to us right now reads like this. Jason says, what made you and the team decide to make a sequel to Breath of the Wild as opposed to a new Zelda game? Anuma says, when we released the DLC for Breath of the Wild, we realized that this is a great way to add more elements to the same world. But when it comes down to technical things, DLC is pretty much data. You're adding data to a pre-existing title. And so when we wanted to add bigger changes, DLC is not enough. And that's why we thought maybe a sequel would be a good fit. Jason then says, was this sequel originally planned as DLC? And Anuma says, initially, we were thinking of just DLC ideas. And then we had a lot of ideas and we said, this is too many ideas. Let's just make one new game and start from scratch. Hell yeah, Gary. Don't be afraid of it. Lean into it.
Breath of the Wild was probably the game of the year last year in our house. My wife put so many hours into it, and our kid too, absolutely loved it.
First off, that's a lie. Last year, your game of the year.
My game of the year was Spider-Man.
Sure,
but I would if you took a vote in our house, I think Breath of the Wild would
sure
be the
not
winner.
Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
That's what I'm saying. Actually, you said last year. You know what I mean? 2 years ago is when Breath of the Wild came out.
Okay, the year that Breath of the Wild was out there. That's the game of the year.
I'm just letting you know. I won't let him besmirch Leah's good name
My wife would say Assassin's Creed Odyssey. She's got more hours in that than anything. But Breath of the Wild was definitely. Dare I say, a breath of fresh air for the Zelda franchise. And I'm very glad they're making a sequel. Maybe Barrett knows the answer to this. If you don't,
Barrett,
he just walked away to get me.
When's the last time? Because it's usually when they. Jason asked a good question here because typically each new Zelda game is its own new thing, right? Different somewhere else in the timeline.
Yeah, what you think?
Different art style, just a different approach.
Now
we know the original The Legend of Zelda on the NES.
Sure.
Then he did Zelda 2. Which was a different style. Even though it was a straight sequel, it was a different style, side-scrolling. Sure. But is that the last time that there was a straight-up Zelda sequel and not just a whole new game?
Majora's Mask.
What was Majora's Mask the sequel to, though?
Ocarina of Time.
It was?
Yeah, that was the same.
But it wasn't called Ocarina of Time 2.
Oh, that's what you're asking. When was the last time there was a Zelda that just had a number on it?
Well, not even just a number, but it was like, but in every way was like, yes, this is a direct sequel to the previous game.
So Barrett's sitting down. He's a Zelda expert, apparently.
Zelda, did you hear the question?
No.
When's the last time, because Breath of the Wild 2 is going to be coming out, and that's a direct sequel to Breath of the Wild. Mm. When is the last time that Nintendo did that? Instead of the next Zelda game being a whole new approach, it was a direct sequel to the previous game.
Are we talking about mainline series, or are we talking about like the Phantom Hourglass
See,
stuff?
That's where I was going to go. I would say mainline, it's Majora's Mask.
Yes.
But if we want to get out into the weeds, they're like the DS titles. And
yeah, like you have Phantom Hourglass, which is like a sequel to Wind Waker. And then there's a sequel after that that I forget. And
Spirit
it's
Tracks?
Kind of like Spirit Tracks, yeah, is the sequel.
But if
to
this
that.
Game is actually called Breath of the Wild 2,
it will not be called Breath of the Wild 2.
You don't think it will be?
Not a chance in hell.
Because that's what I'm saying. That hasn't happened since Zelda 2 on the NES, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Okay, that's kind of what
like
I was getting at.
With like actual 2 in the title, yeah, I don't think it's happened since then.
Because I think it's typically, these approaches are kind of one and done approaches. They'll do a game in a certain way, and then the next game will come out, it'll be a totally new part of the timeline, different story, different art style, totally different approach.
Yeah.
But Breath of the Wild, we've seen enough from the trailer to know it's basically more Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
That it was enough of a hit that they're thinking, rather than reinvent the wheel again, let's stick with this because people really like it.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a smart idea.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Everybody loves that style. Of that game, basically.
Yeah. And people were you had Jared Petty like asking for since,
oh, Doki Doki.
Oh, Doki RPG, JRPGs. since Breath of the Wild came out, he has been talking about like wanting like a Majora's Mask style sequel, and Fran as well, and it's kind of been in the car, like it's been something a lot of people have asked for, so I think that the fact that they had so many ideas for DLC and the fact that they probably saw a lot of people being like, it would be really cool if we had a follow-up specifically in this world, in this engine, and do like a weird Majora's Mask-like take on a sequel. That's probably why they're like, yeah, might as well, you know.
I think it's great. And in the case of Breath of the Wild, then yeah, certainly the Witta household will be happy to see more Breath of the Wild. But one of the things I like about the Zelda franchises, they don't just stick with one thing, right? Every new game is they reinvent the wheel a little
bit.
Yeah,
they usually
different
have
approach,
like a new
different
shtick.
Art style, different totally different chronology.
Yeah,
like keeping up the Zelda chronology is actually really difficult to track.
Timeline,
right?
It's a mess. Let me tell you, I did a lot of extensive research last night because
you're going to try to play them all in chronological order, right?
Are you?
Yeah,
I didn't hear this.
Yeah,
is that? I mean, I've seen some videos on this, and it doesn't all make sense, right?
It doesn't all make sense, but it's also not as complicated as people make it out to be. Just because if you do enough, if you look up like just even one video and they explain like, oh, there's three timelines after Ocarina of Time, depending on what the outcome is of the end of that game. And then, the reason it's all weird now is because of Breath of the Wild, actually, because there's references to all three different timelines in that game. So it's like, do they converge at one point or how does this connect to everything else? But I think they keep it vague enough specifically for interpretation. So, yeah.
Okay. I'll let you have it. Right, you're wrong over here. Just clarification and stuff. Zyger points out that regarding The Legend of Zelda sequels, Phantom Hourglass on Nintendo 3DS is a direct sequel to Wind Waker, which we said, taking place directly after the events of Wind Waker. And Spirit Tracks takes place 1,000 years after that.
Yeah, but it's like, it's still directly connected because there's a character from Petra's crew that's in Spirit Tracks.
Gotcha.
And it's the Zelda in that game is like Petra's descendant.
But even though from a story chronology standpoint, those games were different in their own ways. Breath of the Wild 2 is like, it's just, I mean, obviously it'll add new stuff, but it's basically just more, it's the same style, it's the same characters, it feels like a direct continuation in every way of the previous game.
And then Nanobiologist chimes in, a link between worlds is technically a sequel to A Link to the Past and is considered an indirect sequel to the game with the same world but different people inhabiting it.
I think you may have bitten off more than you can chew here, my friend.
No, that one I slightly agree with. It's a weird one where A Link Between Worlds takes place after Link's awakening, so it's like, it's weird. Zelda's dumb, but I love it. And yes, I'm weirdly obsessed with wanting to replay all the mainline games in Carlotta.
Do it!
I'm going to do it. I have to do a bunch of research on how to play Skyward Sword on the Wii U and dumb stuff like that. So that'll be fun because you still have to use
a nunchuck like a man.
Yeah, you got to do the motion controls and stuff. God, I hate that game, but I'm going to do it.
Man.
All right. We wish you well.
Number two on the Roper Report, Senator Bernie Sanders chimed in about game unions yesterday. This is the he tweeted basically a link to Times article. Every game you like is built on the backs of workers. Video game creators are burned out and desperate for change. He tweets that link out with this text. The video game industry made $43 billion in revenue last year. The workers responsible for that profit deserve to collectively bargain as part of a union. I'm glad to see unions like at IATSE and the broader at game workers movement organizing such workers. That was out of the blue.
Yeah, a little bit, you know, because you don't think of someone like Bernie Sanders
being a big video game fan.
Well, I mean, yes, but of course, what he's really addressing is a subject that he does talk about a lot, sure, which is unionization and you know, fair play to workers and things like that. Bernie wouldn't be my choice for the Democratic nomination, but sure, I like a lot of the things that he does talk about.
God,
you know,
damn hippie.
Financial and social equality, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I've been saying, I'm a union man. I'm a member of the Writers Guild of America. Without that guild, I wouldn't have my health insurance. I wouldn't have any of the kind of the pay and employment protections that I enjoy.
Yeah.
As a screenwriter in Hollywood, I get treated like shit, but there's a degree to which you can treat me like shit, sure, because the Writers Guild protects me.
Sure.
Without that, the degree to which I would be treated like shit, like there'd be no floor.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I could probably get like physically assaulted and all kinds of horrible things would happen to me. So thank God for my union. And because I enjoy those protections, I wish that other creatives and other people working in other, you know, endeavors could have those protections and those benefits as well. And I think that, you know, we're seeing more. I like the fact that Bernie's talking about this, brings it into the spotlight because he's a national figure.
Yeah.
And anything he turns his attention to and decides to talk about becomes news at least for 5 minutes. So sure, I'm grateful for him putting a spotlight on it. And I agree with everything he says on this issue. And with everything that we're talking, I think, you know, it's nice to have that. He'll be talking about something else next week. But I think what we're seeing is that is possibly more consequential is this groundswell of conversation about crunch.
Yep.
And how games are built often on the backbreaking labor of people who make games. We saw it was a big topic at E3.
Yeah.
You know, Nintendo were applauded for pushing back Animal Crossing and saying we care about work-life balance. Other game developers were coming out because it's the right thing to do, in part because they have to now. They can't get away with it anymore.
Those clowns at Iron Galaxy were in the news yesterday for how they don't do it.
Right.
Adam Boys and Dave Lang over
talking
here.
Talking about how they just don't want to work anymore. I like Dave Lang.
Dave,
I'm at a point in my life where I just don't want to work. I totally relate to that. We all do get to that point, some quicker than others. But it's coming. The day is coming. I do think we're going to see unionization, and I think it'll be a good day when that happens. What's your view on this?
On unionization?
Yeah.
I think it's a good thing. I mean, in this instance, it's, of course, not our, not my side of the industry. I've never been part of a union, obviously. I think, you know, you talk about game writers unions being a thing now. As you see Jason tweet about that or talk about that a lot.
Do you think that unionization can offer the solution, or at least part of the solution, to game crunch and these issues?
I think
that
it can help. Yeah, I think it can definitely help. Collective bargaining on that level definitely can. Like, I think it's fun. I'm sticking with me. It's gonna be a walk. Yesterday on the show, when it was me and Andrea, we were talking about something else. Oh, the movement of how it was a question from the audience about how the movement at E3 was the, hey, we're continuing our games with free content. Keep doing this. And this, is this sustainable for the industry? Is this a good thing? Blah, blah, blah. I said what I liked about that and how that's been happening is that we talk about this on such a granular level every day with Games Daily that, like, remember, you know, when we first started the show and you were joining us in 2017, right? There would be, it seemed like 3 months where every day we talked about loot boxes. Every day we talked about somebody doing fucking loot
boxes. Yeah, it was getting
kind of
tiresome.
Totally. But and that's because we're doing it in the moment, day to day.
Yeah.
Whereas when you pulled out of a big picture, you had to see, like, here's where the trouble spot happened. And then 2 years later at E3, right, in 2019, it's everyone coming out and being like, everything's free. There's no season passes. There's no microtransactions. It's all here the way it's supposed to be. And you see that ripple effect of it changing, right?
Right.
In the same way, I feel really since Schreier came out, that it was when Jason came out at GDC, and when they was like, and was that this year or last year though? When Jason made his GDC appearance on Games Daily and was talking about, like, coming right off the heels of how much union talk there is at GDC. And I feel like now when we talk about these different articles about crunch, the shit riot, right? How people now, the articles being like, I'm talking about this Dave Lang article, right, from Schreier over at it was right, over on Kotaku, right, of how Iron Galaxy avoids crunch. I feel like we're talking about crunch in the same way where there are these inevitable ripples that are going to go out. And what does it look like in 2 years? What is the change? And I think the change will be not the end of crunch. I just think a more humane crunch. I don't know if you can end. When you say crunch, it's such a broad term where, okay, cool, it's working long hours and it's doing all this different stuff. But there's the crunch that I feel the 14-person developers are doing because they love their game and they want to finish their game. And not to say these other people don't love their game. I know everybody loves their game. They want to finish it and they want it to do the best thing possible and they're all in it. Yay, you know, drinking a beer, hanging out, having fun, right? And then there's the crunch of, shit, fucking, the Hauser brothers haven't left their office. We can't leave our office. Right, I want to go home to my daughter's recital, but I can't, you know, like that kind of thing. I think seeing that get snuffed out is obviously a good thing. Seeing, like, I don't know if you had a chance to listen to yesterday's episode with Andrea. Like, we had an article from an interview with Strauss Zelnick, right? Take-Two CEO, where he was like, I don't understand why people would want a union. It's like, what are you talking? Like, he's so disconnected. The fact that we're having the conversation of what the problems are, what the pain points are, what the actual workers themselves are getting up and saying the problems are, I think inevitably leads to, okay, let's fix this. Because again, I don't think the video game industry is filled with assholes that are trying to fuck everybody over and be complete jerks. There's definitely fucking scumbags, don't get me wrong. But I don't think that's the main thrust of the corporate overlords or the management in general. I don't think it's like that dire of like when some of the other industries have unionized to basically overthrow this oppressive regime that wants them. It doesn't care if they die on the working room floor, right? I think that you're going to see changes. I think it is unsustainable. I think that we've lived long enough and been in industry long enough and had the stories go from celebrating the fact that the MLB, the show team, has like cots in the offices, the execs do, because they crash out there and sleep there during crunch. From celebrating those stories to now looking at the stories and be like, this isn't sustainable. This isn't the right way.
The attitude has shifted, right?
100%.
That's what I'm getting at. I think that's the most important thing. Yeah. The attitude towards that, it's no longer something to be celebrated. It's no longer, oh, look how hardcore we are. We now understand that work-life balance is important. We see it all over the place. Like self-imposed work-life balance and anti-crunch is important as well. We see like Twitch streamers all the time burning themselves out because they're saying, well, I'm going to do a 48-hour stream or whatever, and they kill themselves over it.
Jack Septicai, you know, just took, in the last few months, took a lot of time off, right? Yeah. Like, I need to recenter. I need to fix this. Yeah,
yeah, you got to take breaks.
And so I think as an industry, they're waking up to it. And so it's the teeter-totter. It's the spectrum of, well, there should be nothing or there should be a union. And will being somewhere in the center, will you see... you know, people are always talking about like, well, unions are going to be so hard because there's so many different developers and industries. And it's like, cool. So is it going to be that the, you know, employees at developer X make their own union, like small U union that is collectively bargaining and talking to management about what they need, what they don't need, like that exists there to try to help them? Is it that it'll be multiple, you know, okay, we're the Santa Monica video game union, right? We're Naughty Dog and the Initiative and Insomniac. We're getting together that way and trying to hold it together. I think something is coming, something is changing, and I think these are the first steps towards it. And I do think, again, like you brought up, like bringing it to the national stage, right?
Yeah, good for Bernie.
Yeah, and puts it out in a way that we all know it's happening. We all know this conversation's happening, and I think the more eyes on it is what leads to change.
Yeah, I think so. And again, whether or not this will move the needle at all, I don't know. But you know, to the larger point, I do think that unionization is at least part of the solution. I think that I don't think that companies like EA and BioWare, well, maybe not EA, but companies like BioWare and these other companies we hear about crunch all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think they're necessarily evil, but generally management gets away with what it can get away with.
Yeah.
And I'm a general believer in the idea that self-regulation doesn't work. Trusting big companies to regulate themselves and have kind of like corporate integrity and actually care about their employees the way that they profess to generally doesn't work. They will get away with what they can get away with. So I feel like unless there is some kind of external mandate or pressure that they cannot ignore.
Well, I mean,
this is, again, we wouldn't, if self-regulation works, we wouldn't be seeing these stories about crunch.
100%. And the reason, if this is your loot box, where you're like, I'm so sick of crunch and unions, you're going to hear about it more because it isn't even about this getting announced now, right? It's about that we are all sitting here and maybe I'm just talking for myself, maybe, and obviously for you and enough people, but like, I don't want my creators, my artists who are making the art I love to miss out on life events for video games, right? I want my games as quickly as possible. And like when Animal Crossing got pushed, it was like, But it's also like, no, I mean, take all the time you need. I'm going to be there for Animal Crossing when I get it. Don't kill everybody. I don't want people missing family events and not seeing loved ones and not going home and not having bad sleep schedules and getting ulcers. And no, I don't want that. I want everybody taken care of. Crunch sucks, and it needs it. The oppressive crunch sucks and needs to be fixed. If the way you work is to be crazy and okay, I'm not gonna get in your way. I don't know. I'm not saying they should lock the doors of the studio and throw everybody out or something. You know what I mean? But I don't. That's why it's a complicated issue. I don't know how to fix it. But what we need in the reporting, right, is what we're getting, where we're gonna get check-ins, right? This is not video games, but it kind of is, right? Rooster Teeth just had a thing go through on the Reddit this week where there was a thing about the Glassdoor reviews on the site, you know, Glassdoor, where you can go review places to work or whatever.
Okay.
There was a whole bunch of reviews went up that were like, hey, man, it's crunch over there and it sucks, right?
Oh, and Rooster Teeth?
Yeah, okay. On their animation teams. Okay. So I don't know anything about it because, well, I don't know anything about Rooster Teeth, period. But I don't know. Definitely, this isn't like Bernie and Gus's Rooster Teeth. This is the animation, Genlock, all that okay. stuff. And pretty much, I it was like one of those things where I woke up in the morning and saw it on making the rounds on the subreddit. And then by the time I got to the office, Matt from Rooster Teeth, who's whatever big wig title he has now, had already put up a blog statement on it, right? Of like, hey, like I wanted to chime in on what we're seeing on the Reddit. We understand that this is something we knew that it was something to the effect of like, we knew that we were pushing too much and we're already looking at how to change this and already doing that and stuff, right? I saw that and I was like, okay, great, awesome. They're going to fix it. Because number one, I know Matt personally. And number two, I know Rooster Teeth I know the people who work at Rooster Teeth, and I definitely don't think at the top of Rooster Teeth, Bernie's rubbing his hands like trying to fuck over his workers, right? I'm not there for the day to day. I don't know how it happened. He announced employees shifting around there, like leadership teams shifting around. People I don't know from Adam, so maybe they suck. I don't know. But it's that thing of taking my personal investment out, knowing Matt personally, right, from the Gauntlet and just being around it, Rooster Teeth, now it is cool. Somebody has to follow up with that in 6 months, 9 months, a year, 2 years, right? Is it all lip service? Is it not? And that's what we're seeing here, too, of like, cool, things are bad and people are talking about how to fix it, and developer and publisher X and Y are saying, we're not going to be that way, we're going to be better, you know, hip, hip, hooray. Cool, prove it. And it's the same thing with Riot, right? In a different way, in a different thing of like having a toxic culture of cool, there's been all this reporting on all these protests on it, and they keep saying they're doing it. And, you know, when they did the last round of protests where there was the walkout at Riot, right? Riot's response was, well, cool, and we don't agree with that part of it. We're working on it in collective bargaining. But they had, like, remember, like, basically the roadmap of changes they're making with checks next to what they've done, what they're looking to do right now, what the next 6 months are going to do, what the 12, you know, like, that's the transparency you need to make sure this is getting better. And
you got to check back in on that stuff, though. Yeah. Again, I think a lot of times these companies say all the right things,
yeah,
make all the right moves, because, again, it's what they feel like for their own image they need their audience to see. But you got to make sure there's, I mean, I'm sorry, if some members of our audience find it repetitive or boring that we keep talking about, you know, crunch and unionization and, you know, some of the less fun things that goes into making all the fun things that we enjoy, too bad. I feel like it's an important, you know, it's an important part of, you know, what we do here is very silly, it's kind of funny, but, you know, people like Jason trying to, it's the job of all of us, whether it's kind of goofy commentators like ourselves or more serious journalists like Jason, I think we all have a responsibility to pay attention to this stuff.
Oh,
and
sure.
Hold their feet to the fire and make sure that it isn't just a thing they can slap up an impressive roadmap and then hope that in the very short attention spans we have these days, we'll move on to something else and they can just throw it away.
100%.
You've got to check back on these guys and make sure they're actually following through.
Yeah, 100%.
And again, we'll know if they were. One of the nice things about the internet and the social media age is there's a million different ways now for whistleblowers to get this information out there.
Right.
And we're seeing it more and more.
And I think, you know, for me, it falls back to, and it's actually in the article Bernie tweeted out, I started reading, I got maybe halfway through, it's told through the lens of one of the Telltale employees, right? And like, I think that's like such the example of why I think the unions or something needs to come in and be there for these people, right? Let alone the fact that it's talking about, you know, this fan who got hired, dream job, develops an ulcers, coughing up blood because of the working thing.
Oh my God.
But it's more the fact of, remember how overnight Telltale was gone. All these people lost their jobs. They had no benefits. It was 2 weeks of salary or something.
Yeah,
to that
totally
effect.
Cut loose.
Yeah, no medical benefits. Like, that's where you need someone fighting and protecting, where collective bargaining helps, I think, in a lot of ways that individual employees don't.
Right.
So we'll
I'm telling you, there's a lot of bullshit out there. Companies always like to talk about their employees like their families. They're not your family. Honestly, I guarantee you that 99% of the companies people work at, your boss does not give a shit about you.
And that's definitely true here. Fuck you, Kevin.
And that's why it's so easy for them to cut people loose. You know, they just do it's all about the bottom line.
Yeah,
and it's very disheartening.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Some of your wrongs in here. Lord of Pwn says Jason was on Kind of Funny Games Daily during GDC in 2018. So that's how long we've been talking about unions.
Just last year.
I feel it keeps ramping up. And then Nanobiologist points out Matt Holum is the CEO of Rooster Teeth. I said a highfalutin title, and that's pretty highfalutin.
Kind of impressive what they built over there at Rooster. Considering I remember when it was two guys making... Red versus Blue, like Halo Machinimas. They all started from that, didn't it? The empire they've built over there.
Exactly.
And I happened to be watching reruns of Always Sunny in Philadelphia, one of my favorite shows.
Yeah.
And Bernie's on an episode. He's got a little cameo.
Yeah.
So I was like, is that Bernie?
Yeah.
I spotted him.
Look at you.
How did he pull that off?
I think...
Does he know the guys or something?
I think so, yeah. I think... Yeah,
maybe they like his content or whatever.
Fandom, yeah. Well, because they're big video game guys. They were on the Ubisoft stage.
Yeah, because Rob's doing this video game show. Yeah, now,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. What do you know about it? You're writing on it yet?
I don't know much about it. I know that obviously it's my cup of tea because it's a subject I am invested in.
Yeah.
And those guys are hilarious. I think it's a great combination. This is going to be a really funny show.
Okay. Number three on the Roper Report, we have the NPD results for May 2019. This is from Matt Piscatella on Twitter, of course. What up, Matt? Here are your top 10 games for the month of May. These are physical and full game digital for publishers in the Digital Leader panel, ranked by dollar sales. Number one, Mortal Kombat 11. Number two, Days Gone. Number three, Total War 3 Kingdoms. Number four, Bethesda. Number five, Grand Theft Auto 5. Number six, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. Number seven, Red Dead Redemption 2. Number eight, MLB 19. The Show. Number nine, Minecraft. It's back. And then number 10, NBA 2K19. Worth pointing out that both from Matt's graph here, Super Smash and Rage 2 have asterisks next to them. I believe that means they're excluded from the digital sales, but you can kind of funny you're wrong me on that if you want.
Just a little note on Days Gone, which has been noted is selling really very well.
As Matt reports, Days Gone was the second best-selling game of May, repeating its April performance.
What I'm also noting...
And is now the eighth best-selling game of 2019. I apologize.
It's impressive. What I'm also noting from keeping my ear to the ground on the social media and Twitter is that I feel like the narrative is changing a little bit. When the game first came out, it was a big critical pylon. Remember? Sure. There was like a lot of the critics were really harsh on it. And it put me off playing it. I had a copy of it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, maybe after these reviews, maybe I don't want to get into this. The game seems broken. Seems like just another video game. Like, what's special about it? And it put me off. But I started to see, over time, people warming to it more. And just the other day, I can't remember, I'm blanking on who it was, but there was someone I follow on Twitter, either another filmmaker or another writer or someone, a creative person whose opinion if they say something, oh, maybe I should pay attention. I had a big tweet about, like, I don't think people are giving enough credit to Days Gone. It's actually really good. It actually has a really good story. A lot of the bugs have been fixed in the patches now. Like, this game should be getting more attention. It obviously is getting plenty of sales attention. Yeah. But I wonder if the critical narrative over time might shift. As people look back and reflect on it, that initial kind of very harsh critical reaction, I don't know, maybe we jump the gun a little bit. And maybe it's a better game than that first critical reaction.
Well, this is why you need to play
suggested.
The games, Gary. When I give you the games, play them. Just try them out. You know
but
what
there,
I mean?
I get it. I only have so many hours in the day.
Yeah.
And if I have a game that suddenly is getting critically, getting the shit kicked out of it.
Sure.
I think, oh, maybe I'll play something else that is going to be better. I've been playing other stuff. But I'm inclined now to actually give it a chance.
Well, I always bring this up and I always get the year wrong, but it doesn't matter. GDC... And when I was still at IGN, we went to see Eric Brudvig, former IGN guy who was working at EDAR at the time, who does all the mock reviews and studies data and all that jazz, do a panel. And the most salient point I took out of it, right, was that review scores don't matter. What matters is getting your game reviewed. People, if the review's good, mediocre, terrible, that over time matters less and less and less. It's just the fact that the game got reviewed and had people talking and has mind share that it's even if you heard it was bad, then it's on your mind when you hear it might be good or when you see it scoring well or doing whatever, that there's that to it. Days Gone in particular, I think, is a very interesting case. It was a very bizarre launch, I thought, where it was the critical review and myself just like, I didn't enjoy this game. Like, and I didn't hate it, as I said, right? I was just like, it's a mediocre game.
Yeah.
And then the other side pulling of, the audience, and maybe, again, maybe just a vocal minority of people who played it and wanted to, not even a vocal minority in the bad way, vocal minority, in the, you know, just a few people who wanted to tweet about it, the audience being then positive about it. And it was this weird shakeup of, I think it got lost in the sea of, like, I didn't, you know, I'm like, I think it's a mediocre game, right? But there were reviewers who were, like, just trying to crucify it and take it down. So then that got, all the criticism got lumped that it wasn't, even that the game's, it's a 6, 5, 7, it was that everything's, it's a 4, right? And that made people come in, I guess, with maybe low expectations. And then when they started having good times, they're like, what are you talking about? Like,
maybe that's it. The expectations were set low initially by that first batch of reviews.
And what gets very interesting, I think, is where are we going to be a year from now with Days Gone? Or even at end of the year? Is this a game you're going to look fondly, people are going to look back on fondly and be like, you know what, this deserves a Game of the Year award, this deserves an award for best action adventure or best open world, whatever? Or is it going to be a year from now a game that I think falls into like the Mad Max category, where again, Mad Max didn't review well, but people really dug it, but I don't think you hear people talk about Mad Max a lot. You know, it comes up occasionally. It's like, oh, yeah, I played that. I enjoyed it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Or is it going to be a game that people are like, no, this is like an infamous for people. This is a thing that really resonates with them and sticks with them.
You know how like in films, oftentimes when a film comes out, it doesn't always find its audience right away. Right. It doesn't get a great, but over time, people find it and it comes to be really well liked.
Yeah.
But it takes a while. Does that happen in games?
I think so. Yeah, I think now more than ever with updates, right? I think that, I mean, that's the biggest thing where you have,
because the game gives, it's not a static thing, right?
Exactly.
The film is the film forever.
Yeah.
But games can actually improve over
time. And that's
time.
The thing where, you know, Days Gone did, like, what there was, I don't remember exactly, I guess, obviously, but there was an article of like, Days Gone's been out for 6 days and it's had 7 patches. Like, you know what I mean? They clearly were doing stuff. But even beyond that, what I've appreciated about Days Gone is Sony Bend's commitment to it and the fact that, like, they announced that, you know, like, the content they're going to put out for it. I think they've already put out some of it, but, like, you know, they're going to put out a harder difficulty. They're putting out challenges. They're putting out things you can do to get biker patches for the vest that'll make you more powerful in the game. And it's like, that stuff, I'm like, oh, you know what? That actually, like, because that was my thing. Sure, I had bugs and I fell through the world reviewing it. That was never, I didn't like the gameplay loop. I didn't think it was a rewarding loop. So when they started talking about that stuff, I was like, you know what, actually that is moving towards what my problems were with the game, right? It still doesn't help me with, I don't like the way they set up the camps and the way they set up the credit system and the way they set up that I have to finish everything. There is no main path. The monotonous way missions are given and they're just the same thing over and over again. Maybe that will get fixed or changed or tweaked or whatever as well. But it's also video games. It's also art. It also is like, what do you take out of it? What do you want out of a game? And I think it did land at a good point in time where, again, it didn't have a lot of stiff competition around it. It wasn't like there was like things fighting on its date. So I think it is that game that you give a shot to. I think eventually they're going to put it on PlayStation Plus or give it a really steep discount, I think, and you'll see even more people jump in and be like,
it's interesting. I mean, I obviously in the case of like games like Anthem and Destiny, where they're kind of essentially living organisms that are constantly changing and growing and evolving, then certainly then, yes, the perception of a game can change over time because the game fundamentally changes. With something like Days Gone, which is more of a single player closed experience, I think it's great that they're continuing to support it and add new features. What are they actually trying to achieve there, though? Are they trying to make the game appeal to the audience that didn't initially buy? Say, hey, we've got all this new stuff now. Maybe try it now. Or are they just trying to get the people who bought the game to like it more? Because they're not getting any more money that way. The only reason to keep supporting the game and adding features is presumably to try and find new people to buy it. Because, you know, they've got a
different thing to offer. I think it's a little column A, little column B. I think it is a thing of like, first off, you know how you know video game development. I know a bit of it. Like, obviously, you have a roadmap and a plan long before.
Yeah.
It's like they launched the game. Like, fuck, critics didn't like it. Start making DLC. Like, they were doing this stuff no matter what.
Right.
I think, you know, putting in the challenges, doing the photo mode stuff, it's about, as everything else is in 2019 with the internet, building a community where I think they want to keep the people who really... Days Gone is a long-ass game, right? And I think, you know, when we're reviewing it, it is, let's sit down and plow through it and do it. And obviously, when people got it, that's how people played it as well. I'm going to sit down and do all 50 hours in a weekend or whatever. There is a number of people who don't play games that way, right? Who do play to their heart's content at their own pace and are still playing Days Gone and haven't rolled credits and don't know, you know, the main storyline beats. I think giving them a reason that when they turn it back on, like, oh, cool, you added more stuff. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I think it's also the idea that, as always, I don't think PlayStation wants people selling, and any publisher for that matter, selling their games back to GameStop. So if there's the promise that, hey, you really like this and we're putting out more challenges and a new game mode, a new game plus and all that stuff, so hold on to your copy goes far too. And it also, you know, engenders goodwill in terms of, awesome, like, I bought this game and it is continuing to pay dividends on it. I liked it enough that I'm keeping it on my PlayStation Cross Media Bar so that when they do drop new content, there's a reason for me to jump on my bike and run around and beat the hell out of some freakers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else you got?
Rebecca Valentine chimed in over at gamesindustry.biz and said, software dollar sales hit $262 million for the month of May, down 13% year over year. Last month marked the lowest May software dollar sales since 2013 and the lowest May new release dollar sales since 1998. Year-to-date software sales are up 2% to $2.2 billion, with all platforms declining save for Nintendo Switch, which saw software sales grow enough to offset the drops.
Nintendo...
That can't be stopped.
I thought Nintendo was the big winner at E3.
Oh,
do you agree?
Did you watch our conference?
Yeah, of course they did.
Okay.
I don't think there was. Was there a run? I mean, other than Keanu Reeves, was there a runaway winner?
When the biggest story is of E3 is a contest between a celebrity and a dog.
Yeah.
Maybe the games weren't that strong. I mean, I get it. We all love Keanu Reeves. And I'm the last person in the world to say anything. It was a great moment.
Yeah.
And the whole "You're breathtaking." I loved all of that. Yeah. It was a nice nerdy moment. And the guy bringing his dog out on stage, that was cute as well. But it does kind of make you think. Yeah, but what about the games? It seemed like there wasn't really a standout, like, one game that was like the game of E3.
Final Fantasy or Cyberpunk. Maybe. I think those are the ones people waffle
between. But even Cyberpunk, I feel like the story of Cyberpunk at E3 was like the beginning of a bit of a backlash, because a lot of people are not liking some of the themes that Cyberpunk's exploring. They're getting more into after. So they did some really, I don't know if you've been following this, but kind of more on the cultural side.
Yeah.
I noticed that there's been a little bit of a backlash now that people at E3 were able to do a little bit of a deeper dive into the gameplay and the story and to talk to the developers in more depth. There was a little bit of a backlash from people that are very familiar with, you know, the cyberpunk culture and the board game and everything, that they felt like, from what they were seeing in the game and the story,
yeah,
and the themes, that the cyberpunk game and the developers were, they felt, the cyberpunk people, kind of fundamentally misconstruing and misunderstanding some of the themes that cyberpunk is built on.
Sure. Like, hardcore cyberpunk fans, yeah, are like, this isn't,
like, that is actually, they're saying, like, you know, the way that for example the cyberpunk developers are dealing with the way that the society in the world deals with and views body augmentation is fundamentally, they argue, the inverse of how it's supposed to be in the cyberpunk world.
Gotcha.
Anyway, I'm not an expert. It was just interesting to see. My main point is, I didn't really feel like there was a big standout other than Skatebird, which for me is the game of the show.
Hell yeah.
Thanks to the showcase for bringing it to my attention. But I kind of felt that if you had to say, like, who had the best showing, I'd probably say Nintendo.
Interesting. I think it comes down to personal tastes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's just where it's all over the map. I think Tim agrees with you, so you got that going for you.
Well, I mean,
you
Tim,
Nintendo we're
the Nintendo fanboys.
Before we trade off, I just want to get a few your wrongs in here. For MPT, nanobiologist says the MPD asterisk actually means the one asterisk that I was talking about is no digital sales. So I was correct. That's not a you're wrong. And then Dane O'Bird. Yeah, Daniel Bird says maybe Gary follows Rami Ismail on Twitter. You follow him? Vlambeer? He mentioned a creator he had an interesting take on Days Gone. Rami tweeted on May 27th, I've been thinking about Days Gone and I've concluded the following. While you're playing it, it's a 4 out of 10, maybe a 5 out of 10. If you finished it, it's a 7 out of 10. And as the memories of the super wide range of issues and problems and bad gameplay fade, it might turn into 8 out of 10 memory.
So that's maybe a good example again of how your memory or how you feel about a game can change over time.
And
I often don't like, when I go see a movie, how I feel about the movie when I walk out of the theater is not always how I feel about 100%. It a day or a week or a month later.
Sure.
And that's true of games as well.
And that's the thing where I think you can sit there and be like, you forget the things that annoyed you in the moment, right? Or what you didn't like about it in the moment. And yeah, you do, like Rami's talking about. Maybe you just get hung up on how much fun it was to ride the bike or do this thing. And
right.
I've thought about it when they've done the DLC of the patches, like I was talking about. I was like, I should kick that back on and go fight a horde and see what it feels like. But I haven't, because there's a million other games to play. Hey, Gary, if I want to know what other hella games out there were to play, where would I go?
I already turned the page over.
You son of a bitch.
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform, as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Yeah! Out today! Antiquity Lost. Antiquia Lost on Xbox One. Another Sight on PlayStation 4. Shadow and Lies on PC. Mission Evil Guy on PC. Infinity Trap Rehamstered, PC and Mac. Oriza, PC and Mac. Locomotives, PC and Mac. Failed State, PC and Mac. Double Cross launches on Xbox One.
A couple of PC titles there I might need to check out. The titles intrigue me.
Yeah.
Mission Evil Guy, I might look into that.
New dates for you. Harry Potter Wizards Unite is launching June 21st worldwide. Nowhere Profit launches July 19th on Steam. Powwow Rummy Neo, Nintendo Switch and Xbox One July 24th. I think it might just be Powwow Rummy. I think I meant to delete Neo. Irony Curtain comes to PlayStation 4 June 25th.
Irony Curtain, I have to know what they're just based on the title alone. I got to know
Nintendo
what that is.
Switch Thursday June 27th. Xbox One Friday June 28th. Speaking of Xbox One, let's talk about Game Pass. June 20th, Resident Evil Revelations comes to Game Pass, both of them. Right, yeah. And then Rare Replay comes to both of them on June 20th as well. June 27th, Torment, Tides of Numeria, and Goat Numenera. Simulator. I'll say what I want. Goat Simulator. Come to both the Xbox Game Passes. Then leaving Xbox Game Passes for console. Next Up Hero leaves June 27th. Dead Island Definitive Edition June 30th. Devil May Cry 4 Special Edition June 30th. Shadow Complex Remastered June 30th. Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 June 30th. And Zombie Army Trilogy June 30th. 30th.
I gotta look into this Game Pass. I had it for a brief while. I gotta look into Game Pass again because they've done this new thing now, this Ultimate thing where they tie it into you get your Xbox Live and Game Pass all kind of bundled
as
well.
Yeah, for a buck right now.
You save a few, for 1 month, but then they jack up the price. That's how they get you. It's like that free crack rock they give you to get you. I mean,
totally.
Not that I would know.
But you know how they got you, Gary.
How they give you that free crack rock because they know you'll
be
coming back for more.
Dude, I can't walk around San Francisco without being offered a free crack rock.
Being offered a dime bag.
Time for reader mail. Gary, I got some doozies for you. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. We're starting with Grubhub. Don't cheat. Grubhub, if you didn't know, is an app you can use to get food delivered to your door. Just like we did, Kevin. Joe, oh, here we go.
Joey brought something in over
there. Yeah, I know. We had bacon delivered this morning.
It's
been a great Grubhub sponsorship because it means free food getting delivered to the office. Thanks, Joey.
This is free?
Yeah.
It's
You're
fantastic.
Not allowed to eat it on mic.
Did I maybe get an extra?
Oh, my gosh. A breakfast?
I'm going to give a shout out to Grubhub and say, hey, Grubhub, if you're listening, I'll say anything you want. About your product, if you want to get me like on a free account at Grubhub so I can get free shit.
Okay, first off, we don't even have that. The Happy Gilmore free card doesn't exist. Grubhub helps you find and order food from wherever you are. How it works, you type in an address and we tell you the restaurants that deliver to that locale as well as showing you droves of pickup restaurants near you.
Where is this from?
This is from Bacon Bacon in San Francisco.
Oh, they've actually got some bacon.
You don't eat it on the mic, Gary. You lean away from the mic when you eat that bacon.
I step away from the mic to eat bacon.
Grubhub gives you access to your favorite restaurants, reviews, and a 24/7 customer care team that tracks each order and makes sure you get exactly what you want. Further away! Stop smacking your lips! People hate it! The company's online and mobile ordering platforms allow diners to order directly from anywhere. Get $10 off your first order of $15 or more by downloading the Grubhub app and use promo code KINDAFUNNY. That's $10 off your first order of $15 or more by downloading the Grubhub app and using the promo code KINDAFUNNY. Next up is Brooklinen. Making your home beautiful is the ultimate form of self-care. You spend a third of your life in the sheets. Don't you deserve to be insanely comfortable? And now that warmer weather is here, maybe it's time to switch up your sheets and duvets to something a little breezier, lightweight, and soft. Check out our newest linen collection with a beautiful assortment of colors. These are luxury linen sheets and robes without the luxury markups. Brooklinen was the first DTC, direct-to-consumer, bedding company, meaning they work directly with manufacturers and directly with consumers. No middleman, just a great product and service. They've got 12 beautiful linen colors and patterns to choose from. It's in their name, so you know it's got to be good. Brooklinen.com is giving an exclusive offer to my listeners. Get 10% off and free shipping when you use the promo code GAMES at Brooklinen.com. Brooklinen is so confident in their product that their sheets, comforters, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. The only way to get 10% off and free shipping is to use the promo code GAMES at Brooklinen.com. That's Brooklinen.com. Promo code GAMES. Brooklinen, these are the best sheets ever. And final sponsor is Quip. It's time for spring cleaning, and Quip's got an easy way to start with brushing your teeth. Just 2 minutes twice a day can help pave the way to a healthier mouth and mind. And now, the whole family can get refreshed with Quip. The new Kid's Quip has the same 2-minute timer and guiding pulses as the original version with no childish gimmicks so they can brush like a grown-up. A built-in 2-minute timer pulses every 30 seconds to remind you when to switch sides to give you an even clean. Brush heads are automatically delivered on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. A friendly reminder of when it's time to refresh. And you know everyone at Kinda Funny loves them. Tim left his in L.A. and he already ordered a new one. I use mine and love it so much. I keep it clean every day and I'm excited to take it to Montreal with me tomorrow.
Brush you going to Montreal?
I am going. Back up to Quebec. You know what I mean?
For the in-laws?
Yeah, yeah. Well, a little, it's more for Jen work stuff and then seeing the in-laws and stuff okay. like that. Doing a beer tasting. Very excited. Oh, Quip okay. is one of the first electric toothbrushes approved by the American Dental Association. See why we love it and everybody else loves it. You can find out why 1 million happy, healthy miles do too. Quip starts at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/games right now, you can get your first refill pack for free. That's your first pack free at getquip.com/games. Gary, don't look ahead. This first question I don't want
you
to see.
No, I was going
to
say, so you could order from Grubhub.
Yeah. Yep.
Then brush your teeth.
Nailed it.
Which is what you've got to do after you've eaten. And then go to bed in your Brooklyn sheets. Your whole evening is sorted out.
Guys, we've just solved everything. You know what I mean? The 2038 Pokemon CEO writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Are you not familiar with this man?
No, but I like the name.
There's a lot for you to find out about
this
man.
I already like this guy.
Kind of Funny E3 game of the show. IGN Best of E3? No. Presenting Gary Whitta's I Don't Care of E3 2019. Greg, please rapid fire Gary anything about E3 to see what he does and doesn't care about with this year's show. Kebabs, get the care count ready. So, Gary, Cyberpunk.
Is this like a binary thing?
Do you care or don't care?
I know there's no middle. I got to go on to that. Yeah. Care. I'll play it. Yeah. It looks good.
Keanu Reeves.
Very much care. Of course. How can you not care?
Luigi's Mansion.
Care.
Avengers.
Don't care. Looks like a weird dollar store MCU.
Final Fantasy VII.
Do care. Never played the original, but love the remake. This is my big opportunity to get into Final Fantasy VII.
Stadia.
I do care. I ordered the Founders Edition, and I'm very optimistic about it.
xCloud.
Do care for the same reason as Stadia. I like all the. I mean, I'm in the cloud. My head's in the clouds, Greg.
Sure, I've known that for a long time. Gears of War.
Don't care. Lost interest in that franchise a long time ago.
Ghostwire.
Is that the one? The Bethesda Japanese, one.
Yeah, yeah. Ghostwire Tokyo, right?
Yeah, I'll play that. Look good.
Deathloop.
Didn't see enough to know if I care or not. So I guess I don't care because I didn't even see it.
Got it. Fallout 76 NPCs.
Don't care.
PlayStation not being there.
I think Fallout 76, I think they're rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic.
Oh, no, it's going to be fine.
You think they're going to fix it? Because I heard
it's already fixed.
Let's throw in Battle Royale. Really feels like the last act of a desperate company, don't you think?
No, I think Fallout 76 is actually going to rebound nicely. Hasn't already.
All right,
the problem is that we did Fallout 76 and then Anthem came. It's like, man, you fucked up. Oh my God, they really fucked up. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Yeah. I'm comparing two different things. I think Fallout 76.
Well, I mean, which one out of the box was more fucked up, Anthem or Fallout 76?
Ooh, man, that's a dissertation right there. Right? Because, like, Fallout 76 was fucked up on a technical level, right? Like, things T-posing and not taking damage and, like,
badly,
shitty connections.
It was badly broken.
Anthem was fucked
up. Anthem was as well?
No, Anthem was fucked up in, hey, wait, why are there load screens and then, like, not enough content? Like, that was the Anthem problem more than it was a technical problem. Anthem was fun to play.
But you think, they say there are no second acts in American life, but do you think that Fallout 76 can have a second act?
I think we're already part of it. I think the reaction to the E3 stuff was really positive. I think they've actually made a community out of that game that is positive. I turned it on the morning of the Bethesda conference because I've been feeling it. It's been calling to me to go back and jumped in. I was like, oh my gosh, this runs so much better. And then when they announced the NPCs, I was like,
I don't want to speak out of turn because I've not played it. Maybe they've added a bunch of good stuff. I just know that when they announced Battle Royale, I read that as desperation. Let's throw in Battle Royale. Maybe that's a last ditch attempt to save it.
I read it as just like, hey, here we're announcing the stuff you want in a Fallout game, NPCs and quest lines that matter and choices. So we are, the game already is running better. Let's give you a mode today to jump in and try it.
Right.
And it's a mode that doesn't make you actually have to go through like stories and progression and all stuff. You just jump in.
And maybe it's actually now a good time to jump in because it's so heavily discounted. You can get it for like 15, 20 bucks.
They had that free weekend too.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. PlayStation not being there. Care or don't care?
Don't care. I actually think it's, I don't understand the point of E3. Just do your own thing. Let Xbox do their Inside Xbox. Let Nintendo do their Directs. Let PlayStation do their State of Play. Just do their own thing. I don't know why we need to bundle it all together into
E3.
And
then Marvel Ultimate Alliance.
I care more about that than I care about Square Avengers.
Nice. Okay. So that's a care. You care about that. You do. Yeah. I mean, there's a few. I thought it was a mixed bag.
I care. I think if you tallied that up, you would find that I cared about more things than I didn't care about.
Fun fact, says Pokemon CEO, he gave the 2018 Kind of Funny Games showcase. I don't care. What about the last show?
Well, again, even though I was rebuffed and wasn't invited to participate in it, I still support and enjoy it and thought it was very good. I liked it. I do care.
Thank you. That means a lot that you care.
I don't care about not being invited to participate or be a part of it. Sure. I couldn't care less about that.
It's hard to, you know, you're always on the East Coast now. You're always
But I do care about the showcase. I think it's a great thing that you're doing, highlighting smaller games. Again, Skatebird and a couple of other games I discovered from the showcase. I think it's a wonder. I think the showcase is doing wonderful work, and long may it continue.
Thank you. Final question is another Gary focus one. It comes from Borzen00. Good morning, Greg and Gary. This question is all about Gary's new passion of shouting out smaller Twitch streamers and highlighting them through his Twitter account. What makes these smaller streamers stand out to you, and ultimately, how do you find them? Finding a small and budding Twitch channel seems to be hours of scrolling and searching the site for specific keywords, so I was wondering what we can do as watchers of a fairly large channel to hunt down these smaller streamers and give them a shot at making it big. So if you're not following Gary Witt on Twitter, get on it. Because, yeah, he does do a whole bunch of shout-outs. I'm watching this kind
of thing. Most of the smaller streamers that I have found and given shout-outs to are in the retro category. You can subscribe to different categories.
Yeah.
Not just specific games. But sure. Like, retro is its own. Like, there are different channels. Like, if you want to watch people play Apex, you subscribe to that channel, and it will show you all the Apex streams. I don't really... I used to subscribe to the PUBG streams, because I used to watch the PUBG players. And then the only two channels I currently... Apart from, like, individual channels, like Kind of Funny and things like that, the only channels I subscribe to are retro, which is what people are playing at all the old 8-bit games. And I've shouted out a lot of streamers from there. One called Just Chatting, which is just people... And, you know, it's a lot of, you know, people talking nonsense. Yesterday, I found a guy that was trying to eat 100 chicken wings in an hour.
Wow. Watched him. Did he do it?
He tapped out. He only got about 60 done in an hour.
Coward.
He was looking miserable by the end, dude.
Yeah.
But I found my new... So I'm going to give a shout out to my new favorite Twitch streamer. And I've got to try and get him on Kind of Funny, because he's fantastic.
Okay.
He's called The Dapper Rapper.
Okay.
So it's just twitch.tv/TheDapperRapper.
Uh-huh.
And he's a freestyle rapper. And as you chat to him in the chat, he will incorporate your comments into his flows.
That's cool.
And he's a really good rapper, and he plays Fortnite too.
Wow.
So he will drop into Fortnite streams and start freestyle rapping and freaking people out, because he's really good. Anyway, I've become a big fan of him. I'm in his channel a lot. Check out The Dapper Rapper, and I'm going to try and get him on Kind of Funny. I think he would be great for KFAF. You would love him.
Okay,
I want to see him and Andy like do like a jam session.
Sure, yeah, hell yeah.
It'd be fantastic.
All right, I like your style.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to squad up. This is where one of you writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, giving your name, username, platform of choice, and why you need help in a video game. I read it here. The best friends come and find you, and everybody plays games together. Today, Chad needs help in Harry Potter Wizards Unite. His Twitter is Chad Mike Innes. MikeInnis. Chad Mike Innes. Praise Dumbledore, Wizards Unite is finally here. The new Pokemon Go-esque Harry Potter game comes out this Friday, and this little Gryffindor can't hardly wait.
That's what it is. It's like a Pokemon Go.
Yeah, yeah. You go out, you have port keys and you bust stuff. I'm looking for some best friends in San Francisco who want to meet up this Saturday, June 22nd, and run around diddling port keys, punching house elves, or whatever the hell happens in this game. Hit me up on Twitter at Chad Mike Innes. I'll be wearing my knee-high Gryffindor socks.
Remember when Pokemon Go was a huge deal and you would see people congregated around Pokestops?
Yeah.
Is this going to be that again, but now people wearing fucking Harry Potter robes? Because I'm not
remains
down with
that. To be seen, but I doubt it'll be as big as Pokemon
as
Go.
Big.
Yeah.
Nothing's
Pokemon Go,
be as big.
Man. Yeah, exactly. What a thing. I mean, if Ghostbusters World can get as big as Pokemon Go.
Well, Harry, no I don't way. Want to offend you, but Harry Potter is bigger than Ghostbusters.
Maybe, sure. There's 35 years, all right? Scoreboard, everybody. 35 years of Ghostbusters. Harry Potter's been what? 5, 4, 6 years?
Longer than that, I think.
Much longer than that.
No, you know
what? Those kids are all grown up.
It's time for You're Wrong! This is where people watching live on Twitch go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up. Nanobiologist is setting Gary straight. Red versus Blue actually started as an after-work project by Bernie with Matt, Gus, Jeff, and Jason. A little more than two people. They went full-time with Red versus Blue and Rooster Teeth after working on the show for several years after their daily jobs.
So what part did I get wrong? Just that it was more than a couple of people?
You said it was two people, yeah.
Okay, yeah. A small team of guys just kind of doing Halo Machinima in their spare time.
Yep.
And now a pop culture empire.
Chitty Chat Chat Says Gary mentions that being a part of a union protects him from being treated like complete shit from Hollywood bigwigs. However, the union does not protect him from Greg. Watch your back, Gary.
Yeah, this work isn't covered by the WGA, so you can treat me as poorly as you want.
Slap him around!
Lord of Pwn has missed news for me from GameDaily.biz reporting that former Gearbox employee provides proof Randy Pitchford diverted funds to personal company.
Yeah, he's got the receipts.
So is he? Is it just donezo?
I don't know, but he's got some.
Did they file it in court? Is that what happened?
Yeah, he filed papers in court, and you can go onto the court website and see.
Interesting.
Him. Yeah.
Okay, I missed that. Check it out. Okay, so Nanobiologist says to clarify: if you upgrade to Game Pass Ultimate, all of your remaining Xbox Live Gold rolls into your subscription and extends it. Each month of Gold adds two-thirds of a month to your Ultimate. That's too much math. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's too complicated for me.
Yeah. No, can't do it. Sorry. Not gonna do it.
Also, you can get it by like getting Bing points, right, and like accruing
Bing
those.
Points.
Yeah,
is that still a thing?
We talked
Bing?
About that. It's not that easy.
Remember when Microsoft was really trying to make Bing a thing?
Oh yeah,
and they were actually paying. At one point, they were doing product placement and paying people on TV shows to say, "Hey, let's Bing it." Like nobody says that.
According to Tim Dutton, and you're wrong. Happy second anniversary, Kind of Funny Games Daily. I missed the beginning of the show, so you might have already covered this. But if not, thank you so much for everything you do to make this show happen each and every weekday. It means the world to the best friends and the hard work. I guess it's our second anniversary.
Is it?
We did it!
Of what? Games Daily?
Yeah, I guess that's
today.
I guess.
Really?
These kids are usually right about
who keeps track.
I mean, you can just look. I mean,
wait, isn't there one guy that always sends you like?
That's when we hit like milestone episodes.
You're right, episodes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of Funny Games Daily.
I mean, can you go pull up the first? Are you able to do that?
Yeah, YouTube's there. Yeah.
Yeah.
June 19th, 2017. There it is.
Woo!
There you go. Shit. Who was on the first episode?
Andrea.
You and Andrea?
Yeah. Of course. Of course. I don't know why I said
that. Wow, look at how far you've come.
I know,
in
right?
2 years.
I know. We had that. Look at that. Nobody even remembers that. That's how that's the original intro.
This is not the first one we're watching right now?
We are doing a pizza party.
There you go.
Literally. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily.
Oh, look, there it is. There's our beard.
Of course not.
Pre-beard.
Man. How
dark times.
And look at what's annoying, of course, is that, and you can watch this on your own, Andrea hasn't aged. Looks the exact same.
No, she's ageless. But it's a little bit like Star Trek, and your Riker starts without a beard.
Yeah, yeah.
Bit ropey at the start, but you grow the beard, and then it gets good.
Yeah.
And now we're in the good seasons.
We're in the great seasons right now.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every week down a variety of platforms. We run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show. Patreon.com/KindofFunnyGames. Watch it live. Twitch.tv/KindofFunnyGames. Watch it later. YouTube.com/KindofFunnyGames. Listen on podcast services around the globe. As Kevin pointed out, there is a pizza stream today. We are doing a pizza party DiGiorno stream this afternoon. If you want to stick around,
is that sponsored by DiGiorno?
It is, yeah. Mr. DiGiorno finally came through on us. We're playing charades, we're eating DiGiorno and hanging out.
Oh,
really? Set.
When is that?
After KFAF, so not too long.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I have a call I gotta do.
Do the call here. It doesn't matter. Ladies and gentlemen, until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.